Yeah, I just went and saw it for the second time, and it, I mean, not only is it the biggest movie of the last 11 years, you know, in regards to the MCU, in regards to any movies, really, because...
Oh, yeah, just any period. Yeah.
Any period. I mean, it's surpassing all these numbers, and people are going and they're selling out theaters. The theater I was in today wasn't very sold out, but it was... Like, you had these people who hadn't seen it yet, and I was sitting there, and it's been out for, what, like 2 weeks now or something?
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of knew what to expect. My wife wasn't able to go with me this time, and I really wanted her to sit with me and rewatch it. But when I sat there, rewatching it, I got so much more emotionally invested in this one. Because the first time was just like, oh, my God, I can't believe it's finally fucking here. Yeah.
Yeah, and the second time, I was like,
yeah, the second time I was like, holy shit, it hit me right in the feels. It hit me really hard. Like all the stuff that happened, all the emotional events, all the big time events. I still hate Brie Larson. We can get into that later. She didn't do anything for me in this movie. But, you know, hopefully what we can do today is go, I mean, step by step with this movie and not, you know, record for 4 hours. Because it could go that way, but...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this movie could be a case study in and of itself.
Yeah, it was fucking amazing. So, without further ado, let's get it started and talk about Avengers Endgame, what we've all been waiting for. Let's go, Kyle.
Yeah, I'm ready.
The movie opens up to see everybody just dismayed, depressed. The snap has happened.
Yep.
And
Thanos has won. Lost.
Avengers lost. Tony Stark is gone. Him and Nebula, they're playing paper football or table football up in space. Mm-hmm. They're creating a bond. And we see a lot of what the trailers led us to, you know, to understand as like the end of Tony Stark. And, you know, I don't know if you gave into this, but I thought Tony was dead leading up to all the trailers until even when we saw the trailers that had him in the Quantum Realm suits, I thought he was dead. I thought that was a fake out that the Russo brothers did.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe that was past Tony, you know,
past
or something
Tony, right.
That they were like bringing back, especially since the time travel thing we know was the focal point of the entire movie.
And I are going to get into time travel. We're going to talk about it.
Oh, I can't wait to tell you about my theories.
Well, so there's theories, and then there's... Well, we'll get into it. Because I actually tried to explain it a second ago to my wife when we were picking up the kids. And I was like, you know what? I think I got it this time. I think I finally understand it. Even after hearing all the understanding that, you know, Back to the Future was bullshit. And, you know, that your past, you know, changing the past... doesn't necessarily change your future.
Yeah,
it just creates a new future.
Yeah. You can never change the past is kind of their rule set.
Well, it's actually just a statement of fact. It's a switch of the words. It's a switch of the understanding of what time travel is, because I know he said we get into this later, but I guess we could start it now. In Back to the Future, let's just use that as a pop culture reference. Mm-hmm. In Back to the Future, he is asked by Doc Brown to go into the past, I'm referencing Back to the Future too. Into the past because they understand that they can control time now with the DeLorean.
Yep.
And that he needs to go back so that he can ensure his kids are safe, and so he needs to change their past to affect the future. All Professor Hulk says, and am I correct in calling him Professor Hulk?
He's totally Professor Hulk.
Okay.
In my eye.
So he says, when you go back into the past through the quantum realm, anyway, you don't change your future. The past that you go back and affect ultimately becomes your future. So when you come back to the future, you're not coming back to the current state of things. But even that's fucked up because when they do come back, they come back to the current state.
Well, so essentially, like if you, they're in their rule set, if you change something in the past, you're not changing the past. You are creating an alternate timeline from that exact point in time. So the current past is still going to play out just normally, but now you've created a branch where a completely separate timeline paralleling that past is going to run its course at the same time.
So, the Sorcerer Supreme says this to Hulk on the rooftop.
Yeah, and so, say for example, like when Loki takes the Tesseract, right, and disappears. Yes. So he has now created a different branch in the past where Thanos is still going to kill him in the normal scheme of things, right, in Infinity War. So that past is set. That's still going to happen. But now you have a second past that's also going to run its course, which is how they were able to get the Loki TV show on Disney Plus that's happening, if anybody doesn't know. That's going to be that Loki that we're going to get because the other Loki's dead.
Wait a second. So, okay, I get it. Alternate timelines. And they talked about that. Well, that's, again, going back to our reference of Back to the Future. If you make a change, there's an alternate 1985. Yep. And he found himself in the alternate 1985 because of something that he did that impacted that to go forward. Mm-hmm. So then he found Biff Tannen. You know, he owns this, like, huge conglomerate. He's like Trump.
Yeah.
And he becomes...
Yeah. Because he gets the almanac of all of the sports betting things and all of the, like, the history of the entire, like, thing. So he could bet against these huge odds and win massive, massive amounts of money.
And that's because Marty goes back and is affecting his past, but ultimately affects Biff's future by creating an alternate timeline.
Mm-hmm. But in the Russo rules, is what I call them, you have now two separate timelines that are in there. So you have the Biff Rich timeline, and then you have the normal Back to the Future timeline.
That are continuously living alongside of each other.
Yep, that are running in parallel. Same thing with Steve Rogers not coming back. He actually lived his life in a completely separate timeline with Peggy. And then when that life ran its course, that's when he put the quantum suit back on to get back to this timeline where the Avengers were at.
Okay, you know, that's where we're going to stop because that's where we'll need to like pick back up on the time travel stuff, because that's the major part of what I think everybody has an issue with. Mm-hmm. Not only that, but we'll also talk about how Nebula kills her past self and still exists, instead of disappearing, like in a photo that Marty McFly holds up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. I will Professor Hulk the shit out of all y'all's listening.
Okay.
To make sure it makes sense.
So let's go back to the beginning. So you have all the Avengers together. They're meeting Captain Marvel, or they've met Captain Marvel, as we've seen in the end credit scene to her film. Where Brie Larson is now there representing herself, and she saves Tony. She brings him back, and he's just fucking delirious and doesn't believe that anything they did or anything they can do can alter, like, what their current state is, which is just very depressing. And
oh, yeah. He is basically PTSD'd, like, out of his mind.
And it's the I don't know if it was just, like, CGI or whatever, but they made him look terrible.
Oh, and frail.
Just decimated.
Yeah. Yeah, he was like a buck 20 soaking wet, maybe.
Yeah, it was like pretty. Good. Mm-hmm. It was good. It was gross, but it was good. So he comes back, and the people that are left on Earth, like, they're discussing with Tony, and they're talking about their next steps. And they have to put him like in a self-induced coma. And
he's checked out.
Just
completely. Like, he is done avenging. Like at this point.
And you want to believe in that moment where Captain Marvel is like, I'm going to go kill Thanos. But I just couldn't believe it for her. I'll get over it. Anyway, so they're all into it. And Thor's like pumped up, and they go and they find him. It's this really intense scene where there's no buildup. They find him, and Thor cuts off his arm using Stormbreaker, and then his head's just chopped off.
Yep, because they find out that Thanos has destroyed the stones, like, by using the stones so that nobody could ever undo what he did. Like, and so the snap is going to be the snap, and they all have to just live with it. And, like, that, and to me, like, that's what broke Thor right there. Like, this was his descent into Lebowski Thor.
Like, which, like, is the best Thor.
Oh, yes. Which was that moment right there when he couldn't undo what he did. So he was just he checked out of avenging, just like Tony did. as soon as he figured out that, like, all hope was lost, he might as well not even fight for anything anymore if he can't undo not going for the head, you know, the first time.
Which, and this...
I love that, you know. What did you do? I went for the head. And then just walks away.
And then it's a very interesting shot when he walks out and you see this landscape and it's all out of focus. Mm-hmm. And there's so much symbolism in this, and we could go into it for hours, but the Russo brothers had this task of recapping all of these movies. Mm-hmm. Over a decade of movies and storytelling, they had this tremendous, tremendous feat of saying, we're going to take care and like wrap up all these stories, which is something that was done very well in this movie.
Yeah, I think the beginning was perfect because it was Clint's family and them just hanging out. And I went, oh, God, they're going to get dusted as soon as I was in the theater, because I went, oh, OK, this is pre-snap. And so I was like, oh, what a way to get me invested, because like everybody's always rooting for Hawkeye because he's always the one like, who, you know, eventually things work out for him. And then, oh, yeah, that picnic got cut short, definitely. And we get to see him turn into Ronin, like, right there.
And you see him turn into Ronin, and you get to see the Marvel Flipping Pages logo in a very, like, nobody's cheering. You know, usually when that happens, when the Marvel logo comes up, everybody's cheering.
Mm-hmm. And nobody cheered in my theater.
No one did in mine either. It was very like, I wasn't a part of very participatory crowds, mm-hmm. but even in the ones that were packed, it was very quiet all the way through. I've watched videos of people when the end credits happen and, you know, the autographed screen images showed up. Like, I saw the one for Robert Downey Jr. on this video of this theater, and everybody was, like, standing ovation. Mm-hmm. Our theater was very quiet and very chill. Maybe that's just something to be said about Idaho. But, so it's done really quick, cuts his head off, and it's done, and they move forward, and then it's 5 years later. And so it's the death of the altruistic Thanos. The Thanos who had an idea that once was... you know, created out of him actually going to planets and cutting out half of their population by actually killing them. Mm-hmm. And like physically, and it was a lot of work, and he finally got all the stones together and snapped his finger. And it was like, that was the death of someone who wasn't necessarily a villain, who people still agreed with in a sense of making all the universe a better place. But what we find out later when we see an actual villain come out of him is that, you know, he makes a statement. He says, you know, I would have thought that what I did was going to be the best for the world and the best for the universe. But the problem is that, you know, like when you take away half of what people know, they remember that. Mm-hmm. And they get so upset because they want to get it back, and they won't forget it. And that was like the biggest part of this whole movie for me. Mm-hmm. And that's when he became a villain.
Oh, for me, like 5 years go by, right? And you see Scott Lang's neighborhood. It's shitty. Like there's literally shit everywhere. And it's like a ghost town. It's been 5 years. Like the world has not moved on like since then. And you can see that it's like not a better place as Thanos would envision. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, I've wiped out half humanity. And Fortnite's still the number one played game, as we see on New Asgard. like at that moment, which, that was terrible. They could have picked a better video game, but I digress on that. That's like my crusade.
When they're playing Fortnite?
Is that choice. Yeah. You know, when Korg playing Fortnite against Noob Master 69, you know, and he's making fun of him. I actually liked that part when Thor, like, essentially threatens to kill him, like, over the microphone, like, just classic video game banter. But
that's the 5 years later part, and that's the part where we get to see a lot, like what people are doing after the 5 years and what they've dealt with and the people that they're remembering. And I mean, maybe even trying to forget, but Natasha can't move on. And, you know, we've seen, as we mentioned, Hulk found a way to combine the brains and the brawn and to be Professor Hulk all the time. And we see the unfortunate reality of Thor And I, the first person I thought about when I saw Korg was you.
Oh, the minute I saw him.
I know you were. I knew you were without even talking to you about it.
Because as soon as I heard, oh, hey, guys, I'm like, yes, yes, he's alive. That was my only
and Meek
thing. Yeah. Korg and Meek alive, you know. Hey, guys, you could hop on the Wi-Fi. It's free.
Of course.
Good. I love it.
And he needs Thor to deal with a online bully. And Rocket says, you know, you look like melted ice cream. Like, everything about that bodysuit. And the fact that, again, these are decisions that really make us bought into how convincing the Russo brothers can make this whole timeline and sequence look like. But Thor doesn't, like, get more in shape later. He just stays the same shape. He stays drunk. He, in my opinion, is the best part of this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And his character, like, his sense of shame, with the turmoil he's facing when he meets his mom again, he goes back in time to Asgard, where the Aether is still in Natalie Portman.
And you see him be a coward, like, in that moment.
He has a panic attack.
Yeah, you've never seen Thor that way ever. He's always been like Mr. Macho Warrior, not afraid of anything, and he's a big freaking pansy. In that part, like, just a big wet noodle, essentially, is what he is. And a mutant raccoon has more courage than he does, like, at that moment. Yeah, it was awesome to see, because we got to see an entire arc, like, come over, say, 11 years of a superpowered warrior become a completely broken, like, human being, in a sense, or Asgardian, until he finds his mom again, and she, like, sets him, like, on the right path. Even though he wants to tell her, hey, you're about to die, she's like, no. Like, don't even tell me. Like, the future's set. Like I don't care what happens to me. You just need to go and save the world, type thing. Like, that was his jump start that he needed.
I don't think I ever realized how aware of her future she was. And she, you know, she makes a statement, she was raised by witches. And and you know, I was more inclined to understand, okay, she's in control of her destiny, and she's able to articulate and convince what she knows to be the future son of hers that, you know, this needs to happen in order for all this other stuff to happen. So just allow it to be, and then he moves on. But we see that, you know, the new Asgard, and the Valkyrie is still around and, you know, participating in this new Asgard, which looks like kind of like a Nova Scotia or like a Canadian coastal village.
A fishing village or something like that, basically,
Which is old. I mean, I would say that that's maybe not old, but maybe a New Age Norse or Swedish kind of look to it, where it's like all fishing and, you know.
Well, with half the people gone, you may not have been able to construct very much, because maybe all the engineers and construction workers are dead.
Right.
Like, it's a really easy way to, like, because of the snap, say, oh, you can't do this because they all died, you know, type deal. It lets them be creative with how they can design sets, or how they don't put certain things in sets. You know, to quote Professor Hulk, I see this as an absolute win. Is me. Like, yeah. Especially when they finally discover time travel. Like, to me, that was when the movie picked up.
So they discover time travel. Yes, right there. So let's talk about that. So they bring the idea of being able to work through the quantum realm, and this came to fruition for the fact that Scott Lang came back from the quantum realm by his I don't know, like, the quantum realm actuator, or like the actual thing being brought to life by a rat.
The rat's storage. The real MVP of this entire film. Like the hero of Endgame is that rat.
He did it.
To be honest.
Yes.
Yeah.
We should be wearing t-shirts of that rat. So he gets shot out, and he goes to the Avengers headquarters, and he doesn't know the quantum realm. He's a, you know, like a thief. He's very smart, but he doesn't understand it. So they bring it to Tony, and Tony now has a child. He's with Pepper, and he's living Morgan. Happily. Yep. And he says, my future is right here, and I don't want to take a risk on that. And there's that, like, that we get that little intro to Pepper Potts having her own Iron Man suit. and by the child wearing it. What'd you say? Morgan. That's her name, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep, Morgan.
Yep, and that we also get to see the, I guess, what will be forever known as, like, the most tear-jerking meme or statement of I Love You 3000 from this this child as well.
God, so that you was get to all see, over the place.
I know. And you see him understanding that this his new life is his, and he doesn't want to risk anything to take it away. But this is Tony Stark's continuous journey of the selflessness and saying, you know, I'm constantly, as Iron Man anyway, and his, I guess we see this with Howard Stark later, is I am constantly fighting for this greater good. I'm putting all of my energy and all of my knowledge and money into protecting people. And he even mentions Ultron, you know, when he was in that emaciated state of wanting to make that the thing that saved everybody. But no one would listen to him. So he's constantly saying, I could be a savior. I could be this hero. But he's always wanting to say, like, what about my personal stakes? You know, like, but he's never had stakes like this before, like in the game. So he was initially like, no. But then we see him actually discover that it is the quantum realm time travel is possible. And Pepper convinces him he has no other option. Like, we have to do this.
Yeah, because, like, he may have gotten, like, a family in the future, but what about all those other people who didn't? Is kind of like what Pepper puts in his mind. You know, basically telling him, hey, like, you've always, like, you're a selfless person at heart. Like, you need to be selfless one more time. Like, and not be selfish like you want to be. To where he's just, nope, I just want to keep things the way they are, even though, you know, 3 billion people died, like, on Earth. Like he's putting the needs of the few over the needs of the many. You know, Star Trek reference.
Right, but you know, right there. Good one. But you know, the main point that puts him over the edge is Spider-Man, is Peter Parker.
Yep, lost the kid.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we see him in Civil War, then we see Far From Home, Homecoming, and their relationship build there, and then we see Infinity War. And then in this one, you see him, you know, he's doing the dishes and he gets some stuff wet and he dries off the picture of him and Peter Parker. And that's the thing that actually makes him understand that we need to do something. We need to bring these people back. And so that was the, you know, spoiler alert, that's the tearjerker for me when they saw each other again on the battlefield when Thanos' army had come.
Hugs him.
I lost it because Peter Parker was just going off on some explanation of something, and he just like hugs him, and it was just it was insane how much.
And then I passed out, and then I like woke up, and then I was here. Yeah, like he just had the classic like curious kid explanation for what was happening to him.
Peter, and he comes into his own in this as well. But so he finally gets it. He understands that they get all this stuff built together. They somehow build this quantum realm generator. Time travel machine that has, you know, time travel quantum realm GPS built into the hand, and we see that Tony Stark and Captain America squash all their issues, which for me, even though the movie was fantastic, I think I would have liked to have seen more with them. I guess there's that scene when they're in New York in 2012 where he says, do you trust me? And he says, yes. So I guess that's it, but I think I would have liked to have seen something earlier. Maybe you know what? I'm correct. Like at this moment, I'm thinking about it because when he first meets him and he's emaciated, he just got off the spaceship. He's fighting with him, and he's saying, you know, like fuck you, basically.
Yep.
Like we lost, and there's nothing we can do, and I hate your optimism, all that bullshit. And then he gives him this smirk when they're all standing in that circle and they've all got their task of going after all the Infinity Stones. He gives him this smirk that looks, when I watched it for the second time, the smirk looked very like, sure, buddy. Yep. You know, because he is the captain. He's leading everybody.
Yep.
And then it's not until that trust me part where I was like, okay, they're good to go.
Yeah. They are finally like the bros again. Like that that we've seen them.
Were they ever bros though? I think they were always fighting.
Well, no. Well, You got to remember in Civil War, you know, he was my friend. So was I. Like, Tony yeah. considered Cap, like, one of his best friends.
But like,
before Civil War split them.
He considered him his friend, I think, because of lack of friends. So it's like the rich kid who has a lot of friends who don't really care, you know, enough about him, but they care about his toys. Mm-hmm. And I think Cap always saw him as the arrogant dickhead and saw his dad kind of more as maybe a friend, you know, like he helped him get established. I don't know. Tony Stark, I think the person he really, really cared about was Pepper and the kid and Peter Parker. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, Pepper, Pete. Throw back to the first Avengers movie. Like, Cap told Tony to his face, you're not the one to make the sacrifice play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and we see that come full circle in this movie. Definitely. Like, at the end, where, like, he's the only one who makes the sacrifice play.
He's the only one that can.
Save. Yep, exactly. To, like, save everyone. Or then you also see what happens to Captain America, because, like, essentially, like, Tony's rebuttal to that was everything special from you came out of a bottle, but you can't wield Mjolnir by drinking shit from a bottle. Like, you gotta be worthy. So, like, there's, like, parallels there of them, like, being more than just, like, what's on paper to them. Tony isn't just this selfish person. He can make the sacrifice, and Captain America is more than just a person who got super soldier serum put into him, because you can't wield Mjolnir from super soldier serum.
So that's canon, right? Like, that's something from the comic books that people who read know about this.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Captain America has wielded the hammer, and Iron Man has wielded the gauntlet in both the comic books. And so, like, those are both, like, throwbacks, like, to their comic history. It just, like, this ending is much different than the comic books. Because, I mean, hell, even Black Panther has wielded the Infinity Gauntlet.
That's what I thought was going to happen. Even when I saw this the second time, even though I know he didn't, or I knew he didn't, I thought when he said, give it to me, you know, I actually thought for a second, I thought back to Secret Wars, where he put it on and ended Doctor Doom. Mm-hmm. In his reign, like, that was the first thing I thought about. I was like, oh, man, T'Challa putting that on, you know, his vibranium suit, like, he'll knock it out. You know, and there was a part of me that was hoping for that. And then knowing also that Nebula has wielded it, you know, as well. Yep. She's had that on because she was like a zombie at one point. And, you know, he just kept her like enslaved, which is essentially what she is as a cyborg. But so that was interesting as well. I mean, I think we knew going into it that someone was going to have to, based on everything that we knew of the comic books and of that past, someone was going to have to wield it other than Thanos. Like, someone was going to have to make that sacrifice. And I think, I don't know if, because of what I mentioned way earlier, I don't know if people thought that Tony would have made it this far to have done that. And, but, you know, we see that exchange between him and Doctor Strange where he's like, you know, this is the one, which is just fucking intense. So let's go back to that. So they all these characters are back. They identify that they can go back through the quantum realm and come back. We see this insane montage of them identifying and understanding that they can actually go back to three different places.
Yep.
And one of them is New York. And in 2012, one of them is Volmir and Morag in 2014 or 2012.
It's right 2014. Around Guardians 1 timeline.
2014, I think is that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is Asgard, and I cannot remember that timeline, but that's where the Aether is.
Yeah, I just call it like the Thor the Dark World time, because, like, as you know from me, the most forgettable, or one of the most forgettable films.
It's not just you. MCU. Everybody I ask does not like that movie. It's almost like I'm trying to create this census and to prove you wrong. And everybody I talk to is like, yeah, that's one of my least favorites without me prompting them. And I'm just like, ah, fuck it. Maybe I'm the only person that likes it. Yeah, you win. You did. You won that one. So they all go back and they have these moments. And we talked about a little bit before where Loki actually takes the Tesseract. We see some like super comedic moments with Professor Hulk, like, this is when the only time the theater actually got, like, lively was when he said, okay, well, seems a bit gratuitous, and he tears his tank top off, and he's like, ugh, and he just, like, hits a car and throws something.
Oh, yeah, I'm me angry. Yeah. Hulk smash.
And then... Yep, and then the stairs moment where the past Hulk has to take the stairs.
Yep, hate stairs.
So this is where, now we're going to get into the time travel.
Yep.
So, they've gone back. They have enough Pym particles to have done this and go back.
Yep.
Now, okay, follow me here. So Cap and Iron Man, in the scene where I reference them actually being together and aligning on a vision of, you know, accomplishing something together.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Those two go back to 1970.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Lang goes back into the future, or the current future.
Mm-hmm.
They go back because the Pym particles exist in the 70s and the Tesseract exists in the 70s. And this is where your alternate timeline lines up, because ultimately, if, you know, the Tesseract is in that timeline, but what we know now is Loki took it to a different dimension, but there is actually a physical timeline locked Tesseract because all those others are different arms and
Those are limbs different branches in the tree.
Okay, yeah. So they go back, and he gets it. He interacts with his dad. This is another one of those time travel things where if you interact with your dad, like, are you affecting the future? And we saw that, and I'm only going to use one time travel reference. I'm going to use Back to the Future. Mm-hmm. So he interacts, Marty McFly interacts with his dad, and he kind of influences their future. He also interacts with his mom, and there's a funny John Mulaney skit where he talks about how they actually proposition this to the studios, and they're like, okay, so this guy goes back in time and he has sex with his mom. But, like, that, you know, there's that old weird relationship and interaction with his mom. So there's all that weird shit that happens. But ultimately what it does is it really just, like, names him. They have a good name for him, Marty, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in this one, they go back and he talks to his dad and they close up that timeline, right? They close up that relationship, really.
Yep.
And then Cap sees Peggy, right? But he doesn't talk to her.
Yep.
But he realizes he wants a little bit more.
Yep. Yeah, he wants that life he never got.
Right. And that Iron Man was always telling him to get.
Mm-hmm.
So he's there, and he's in Hank Pym's laboratory. He grabs 4 vials of Pym particles.
Yep.
That's what we're led to believe.
Mm-hmm.
So he puts those away. Now, in my mind, and this is where you go crazy on your theories.
Mm-hmm.
He grabs 4. They use, am I right in saying that one of those vials is a use of a Pym particle?
Yeah. From what we see, like, they put, like, a vial in part of the suit to initiate this whole thing.
So it's 1 or 2 times that you get to go back and forth.
I think it's 1 vial per 1 route trip. So say if you were going to take a round trip, it should take 2 vials.
Scott says, be careful with this because we only have a practice run and a full run. So maybe it's like a quick little blip, like of a test.
Yeah.
So he grabs 4 and the reason they went back to this time is because they knew that those Pym particles existed because Hank Pym was gone in the snap.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they go back, they have the ability to grab the Tesseract and have the Pym particles to go forward. So Cap grabs 4, 1 for him, 1 for Tony. So they take that, they get the Tesseract, and they go back into the future. Okay?
Yep.
And my assumption was he keeps 1. And so that he can go back to the 1940s or 1950s with Peggy.
Well, so he needs them so that he can, like, 1, go back and put all the stones back, because that's what we see. Because in order to keep branching time, you need to keep going back. So he needs, especially, like, he'll need more vials of Pym particles to make more, because now that Hank Pym would be back.
Right, so he's back now. Okay, yeah, right.
Pym could make more particles for, like, Captain America to go back and put the stones back into place.
So the four something. That he grabs are superfluous in my thought process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because now that Hank is back, he has all the knowledge for it. He could just make more particles.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's okay. Out the window. Anyway, mm-hmm. Go on your theory.
So what's happened here? Because you have the rules established, right? That the past is the past. And you can't change it. Like that timeline will always happen. All you can do is create new timelines. So when Cap goes back and finishes all of his stuff, like he puts all the stones back, he also has to put Mjolnir back, or else Thor the Dark World can't happen.
Oh.
So he has to put that back as well. That's why you don't see him come back with Mjolnir as old Cap, because he goes back in time with it, because that was the past Mjolnir. And so he has to put it back in there, or else you get an entire timeline with the hammer gone. So he puts that back, puts all the stones back in all their places in time, but then goes back, say, to have a life with Peggy. Now, this is where the lecture comes in. This is the start of Professor Kyle.
Do it.
Time travel lecture.
This is what I want.
Yeah, so as soon as he has gotten to Peggy, right, and made it known that he is Captain America, right, and he's Steve Rogers back, he has now created a new branch in the timeline. So he is now not in the same timeline as he would be, because there was still a frozen Cap in the ice. And also him. Right? So you have two Caps going on. So that's why it causes that branch. Because if Cap is never unfrozen, then the Tesseract is never found in the ice in the first place when he crashed himself in there. In the first Avenger, and the entire timeline doesn't even happen.
Wait, is he frozen and living with Peggy in the same realm?
So he's living in a separate parallel timeline now. So
where he exists and he's not frozen.
Yeah, so frozen Cap is still going to be unfrozen, right? So that's still going to happen.
Right.
But now Cap B, we'll call Cap A frozen. Cap.
Okay.
So Cap B is with Peggy while Cap A is still frozen, right? But if you watch Civil War, you can see how this makes sense. Because when you see old Peggy and the pictures of her children, who is absent from those photos? The father.
Okay.
And so, because if Cap B fathered all those children, you would not want him in those pictures for them to know that someone went back in time and lived out a life, because Cap A still has to be unthawed. And because Peggy was a founder of S.H.I.E.L.D., she could keep a secret about Cap B being in that timeline, right?
You're telling me they planned this in Civil War?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. And so because since Cap B knows all the events that happen, he can always be out of the picture when those events occur.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody knows he exists. Because if people go, oh, well, why didn't Cap help out? Because he knows the events are going to play out the way they're going to play out, and they're going to win anyway. So why should he help out to try to change something?
Okay, I'm going to reference a different time travel movie, because this is another thing. You're just referencing the photos and stuff like that, or him being aware, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. So there's a moment where they're sitting outside the police precinct, and he says, I have to remind me to tell myself, my past self, to hide the keys in these bushes. Mm-hmm. And he reaches in the bushes and he grabs the keys.
Yeah.
So the idea is that it already happened. Everything that you know about time travel, like if time travel was real, I could say, remind me to tell my past self to put the car in the garage, and the car's just in the garage. So it's this. So you're saying, though, that if there's an alternate timeline,
the normal timeline is going to occur without Cap B, but now Cap B is in a specific alternate multiverse timeline where you have two Captain Americas existing in this same timeline. There's still the original timeline where there's only one Cap, and the whole Infinity Saga plays out. But this is a completely separate set of events that occurs in a completely separate Earth. In a sense, time, because they're both running in parallel. So in order for Captain America to be back at that scene, you know, he has to put back on the time-traveling suit. Because remember, he comes back with a fully intact shield. to give to Sam, right? That she
from the 50s.
Mm-hmm, so, well, no, from much later, because remember, he's a lot older.
Oh,
so
right.
In that, so remember, in that timeline, with two Captain Americas and him maybe being able to influence events in that timeline, mm-hmm. the snap may have never occurred in the first place in his new timeline with the two Cap timeline, where he lived out this very fulfilling life, never had an issue, and could have grabbed that shield in the ice before Cap got unearthed in the first place, because he knows where he's buried in the ice. So Cap B could not unthaw Cap A, grab the shield and keep it for safekeeping if he wanted to, like, and not affect the other timeline, because this is completely separate, what we're talking about. So he could have made sure Thanos never happened, like, and he never found the stones. Like, he could have influenced all those events and lived out this very fulfilling life. Then when Peggy died, and maybe even his children died, because remember, he's not going to age as much with the super soldier serum as normal human beings. And so, when everybody that he knows is dead in that timeline, then he can go, okay, I'm going to put on that nanosuit again, go through the quantum realm, and go back to my original timeline to give up my Captain America, like, mantle.
When he's old.
Yeah, when he's old. So he's not, like, in the same timeline, right, when he goes back in time and then comes back, you know, 10 seconds later. He mm-hmm. has lived a very fulfilling life in a completely separate Earth, in a completely separate set of events that have occurred throughout that entire history. And then once that plays out and he lives the life he's wanted to live, then he comes back to the original timeline through the quantum realm to give up the Captain America mantle, is what has happened. According to the Russo rules established in the film, that's how it has to happen, because you cannot change that past. No matter what you do, it just creates an alternate timeline. So Cap lived out a completely different life in a completely different timeline when he went back.
Kyle, I respect you, and I, mm-hmm. I believe you are very intelligent, and I thank yeah. you for that explanation, but I will tell you that any I'm conversation,
right. yes. Yes,
sure, sure. Let's just, I'll just tell, I will say that you are right. I'm going to tell you right now, though, that time travel conversations actually piss me off because of how confusing they are. And I, even in the simplistic nature that Back to the Future or Bill and Ted's or Terminator or any of the movies that they referenced and other time travel mm-hmm. movies have referenced the idea of time travel and what it looks like. And you talk about branch offs and alternate realities. It makes me so upset because it's so confusing, because there are even remember the episode of The Simpsons. It was probably the Treehouse of Horror episode where Homer mm-hmm. goes back and he like steps on a mosquito and all mm-hmm. of a sudden he comes back and it's raining donuts like that.
Oh, yeah.
That those absurd explanations of time travel actually make sense to me, because I get so lost in the absurdity of the idea that the butterfly effect could happen so extremely that it creates these insane changes to our future. And mm-hmm. I'm just like, yeah, I'll prescribe to that. But subscribe.
Yeah. Right. If you want the current scientific, like, quantum mechanics, like, explanation as we actually know it as human beings, you know, the synapsis is you can only travel back in time to the point where the first time travel device was created is the current science that we think is possible. So once we discover time travel and create a device, that's when people are actually going to start coming through it. But you can only go back to that original point to where that device was created, because you can't go back to when the device wasn't made, because there was no time travel device that you could use in the first place. To go back or to go into the future.
But what they discussed in this is the quantum realm essence of time traveling.
Yeah, yeah.
Which
is... I am just saying the current science background is that, so you have to comic book it up a little bit to be able to get this to even happen in the first place.
Sure, great. That's awesome. I'm still confused and I'm still upset. But I love this movie in general, despite of that. And I suspended all disbelief and said, I don't care about time travel in this one, because of how well the Russo brothers took this movie and took all the other movies and recapped them and ended the storylines and the story arcs and said, you know, let's close up some relationships. Let's make sure everybody understands that these individuals that have been heroes for us and have sacrificed so much, you know, for us, the audience, and, you know, for the worlds that they've created, that we're going to put a cap on it and say it's done, it's over. And they did it so well, even though we lost the best Avenger, you know, we lost Iron Man. And and this final fight scene where you get to see Thor, even though he's, you know, looks like melted ice cream, he becomes, you know, he's got a braided beard, and and we see Cap wield Mjolnir, and we see these awesome fight scenes. I actually forgot that, even though I hate Brie Larson, that she came back and destroyed that ship. I forgot she came back for that final fight scene.
Well, and she has her new "I'd like to speak with your manager" haircut as well at that point. that's what I called it. Like that's exactly what her hairstyle is. like you know it's true because you're laughing.
There's a part of me that's like trying to identify how it makes sense. So I'm staring off into the distance, thinking of relevant, you know, appropriations to that. And then I think, you know what? I as a statement, it just makes me laugh. So, thank you for that one.
She has a classic Karen haircut, is what I call it. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I'd like to speak with your manager. God damn it, Karen! Like that's what. That's her haircut.
But that's very the comic book. That's that she resembles Carol Danvers in the comic books with that haircut. Mm-hmm. And this is where we see all of our favorite, you know, just in reference to that final fight scene, we see all of them come together. Doctor Strange creates all these portals and these openings where people come in, and we get to see that, you know, even though we knew that they couldn't have killed off all these people with what Disney has in production for the future. Disney and Marvel and Fox now have in production for this next, like, I don't know, like 5 years or maybe even a decade. They've got all this stuff planned. So we know they're not gone, but we see them come back and we see this awesome fight scene, and we see a snap happen that actually gets rid of the, like, Thanos and his army. And the second time I saw this, I really got to identify the fact that, like, the, you know, I was thinking about the thought process that goes through the person that wears the gauntlet, and that actually took me a bit in the first time I saw it, because I didn't fully understand that the person had to be so focused on what they wanted to do with the Infinity Stones.
Yep.
Because I for some reason I was so honed in on thinking that just the snap with all the stones in a gauntlet just gave you that result, you know, because they were created when, you know, the universe expanded. And so understanding after the Hulk did it, the first time I was like, huh, okay. So he tried to bring that back, but I focused in on that. I didn't fully get it until this last one in that most iconic scene of, you know, when Thanos says he's inevitable and, you know,
I am Iron Man.
Yeah. And like, he says, I am so Iron Man. So good. And he snaps his fingers. He loses his life for it, and that's that sacrifice we talked about. That, like, selflessness that we don't see from Tony Stark a lot of the time in all the movies that we've seen. Well, we see it a little bit in Civil War when he's trying to come to grips with it, but he's still this hero who has, you know, limitless knowledge and money that he can't fully be bought into the fact that he's, you know, here for the greater good. Yeah. John Slattery says that as Howard Stark later, you know, that. He says something about, you know, putting himself behind the greater good or something to that extent. But it's a moment where Robert Downey Jr., the Russo brothers, John Favreau, anybody who was involved in creating this universe and really solidifying him as the main attraction, the person that we go to see, in saying, like, I own this universe. I'm going to be the one who sets it back in order. Like, that moment right there was that. That's another moment where I got really, like, emotional. And it wasn't until Peter Parker came over, War Machine came over, and then Pepper Potts, like, just kind of said goodbye to Tony. And then the end scene where.
And you were like, oh, he's dead. Damn it.
He's gone. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the cheeseburger part is what got me.
See, I didn't get so emotional with that, because somebody else said that got them too. But that didn't get me as bad.
Well, you know, from the first movie, you know, when he gets out of captivity, he's like, first thing I want is an American cheeseburger.
Right.
And then, like, as, like, Tony, you know, as Tony's dead, and they're like, oh, hey, like, what do you want, Morgan? She's like, a cheeseburger. It, like, it brings everything back to the beginning. Like, the MCU started with the phrase, I am Iron Man. And it essentially this era of the MCU ended with the same phrase, and it began with a cheeseburger and ended with a cheeseburger. I had 3 cheeseburgers after I saw that movie.
No, you didn't.
I went to a really great restaurant. It's called Jack Brown's here. They have these really good cheeseburgers that you can get when I go on lunch. And I was like, okay, having cheeseburgers in honor of Iron Man. I didn't tell the waitress that because I didn't want to do Endgame spoilers, you know, for anybody. But, yeah, me and one of my coworkers, we specifically went to Jack Brown's to eat some cheeseburgers in honor.
Spoiling the beginning of Iron Man from 2008. I have never eaten food with you, and I feel like we would probably compete as to how much food we could consume. I think you could consume more than me, but I think it'd be worth doing it. So you definitely need to go out here. Mm-hmm. So this is the first time. It's a lie because it's probably the second time the theater in you know where I saw this came alive, mm-hmm. and when the snap happened with Tony and then Thanos and his crew went away, there was like a blip of a cheer. Like somebody was like, yay. But like there was only probably 8 people in the crowd at the second showing.
Well, you got to hand it to Thanos, too. Like he didn't go out like the normal villain where he's like, damn you, or yelling or screaming. Yeah. He just sits down. And he's like, I lost. Like, this is it. And like he doesn't, there's no like monologue or anything. Just by him sitting down, you're like, he just realizes he's lost and he's not going to fight it.
Well, this is the point where I mentioned earlier where he became an actual villain.
Yep.
And, you know, we see, because this is the past him before he got the stones. And so it's almost like this ramped up, just completely fully charged view we get of Thanos where he identifies that he has an opportunity to correct what the future self of him, that altruistic sense of him, couldn't complete, which is I'm going to create a better society for the universe by doing all this hard work. Yep.
Yeah, reduce it down to its last atom and then rebuild it instead of just taking out half.
And then when they fight him and you see these 3 Avengers, the main Avengers fighting him, he's like, well, you know, I'm going to take this out on you. Now, this is now personal. It was never personal before. It's now personal. And what I've been listening to a lot of podcasts and just interviews and thoughts around this universe prior to going into the movie and prior to us, you know, sitting down and actually recording this. And a lot of it was around just the idea of like what this movie was going to encapsulate and, you know, what Thanos was going to represent. And what Thanos ended up representing was, you know, none of it was ever personal. And sitting down and like I mentioned, having this Thanos from, 2012?
Yeah, find out. It's either 2012 or 2014 Thanos. It's one of them.
But he finds out that, you know, he may have failed in the future, but he, you know, feels like he's inevitable. Like coming back to that idea that his idea is that is the end result that he needs to get to, like no matter what. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, seeing that he at one point identified that he can make this happen and, you know, like he's going to put in all this work, he's going to find these stones, and then when it's finally done, he'll be able to rest. But he's this really aggressive and motivated villain that we see in most Marvel movies. So most Marvel movies have a villain that begins and ends in that movie, whether it's an origin story or just the sequel to the first. But we see Thanos as one that continues all the way through because he's the Mad Titan. He's someone that, you know, is bigger in this universe.
Yeah,
He's the big bad, but we don't see the big bad. We see someone who is like he's delegating a lot of work. You know, even in this one, he sits down, he says, you know, to Nebula, go find the stones. She's like, what are you going to do? He says, wait. You know, he's just going to sit there. So and then when he finally fights all them, he gets so amped up and charged because it's the past him who hasn't identified the work that goes into finding these stones so that he can feel like he needs to rest. It's just this like, it's like a younger version of you, you know, like, or of me, where that testosterone, that idea of, you know, your ideas are the best and you're so cocky and arrogant that you just want to see your plans fulfilled. And he's at that point and it's just amped up by him being able to see Nebula's projection from her mm-hmm. past self, or no, future self.
Yep.
Right? And saying, mm-hmm. oh, well, now I know that all the stones are going to be in one place. I don't have to do any work. You know, when he gets there, and so that's why, you know, I would have expected more, but it is like a moment where I'm like, whoa, this guy is a fucking dick. Mm-hmm. Whereas even in the first one, I was like, man, he's got some views. He's got some ideas. We see a lot of his storyline and the buildup and him explaining why he does what he does. Whereas this one, the old Thanos, we just see him like, listen, I'm going to fuck you guys up. Like, I'm stronger than you. Look at all the shit I have. I just destroyed the Avengers compound by, like, throwing mm-hmm. hundreds of pounds or millions mm-hmm. of pounds of explosives into it. Nobody should have survived.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, you know.
Well, and we do find out that the only person he really can't take on is Scarlet Witch as well, like, during the fight, because she doesn't need to get in close. Like Thanos is, like, hand-to-hand combat, like, he's basically unbeatable that we see, mm-hmm. but in terms of, like, magical powers, he ain't got shit on that, because, like, she completely immobilized him, and he had to, like, launch missiles and kill his own troops just to have a chance, because she would have literally ripped him apart, mm-hmm. like, because he has no Infinity Gauntlet this time, say, to use, you know, the Infinity Stones against her at that point. So we know essentially his big weakness in the films is, like, magic, if he doesn't have something to combat it, in a sense.
He does wield the Power Stone bare and punch Captain Marvel.
Oh, God, he punches her into next century,
mm-hmm.
is what he does. Like, you don't see her until the funeral. After that, she got knocked the fuck out.
Well, it showcases that you need something like that to defeat her, mm-hmm. which, again, shows how much power she has.
Yep. But only someone like Thanos can grab a Power Stone raw and bop you into next week with it.
Well, Star-Lord did it.
Well, he just held the stone. He didn't punch anybody with it.
Oh, true. So you reference the funeral. Funeral's over. Mm-hmm. And then we see old Cap and we see Falcon take up the, you know, Cap's place, which I still don't think. From what I know, Bucky becomes the new Captain America.
So Bucky does in part of the comics, but also in the current comic book storylines, Sam is Captain America.
Yeah, but
America.
Those are storylines that are derived from what we know currently of the MCU.
Well,
right?
So some of these are separate, like, little storylines. Like, I mean, if you think about it, Bucky wouldn't fit as Captain America in the MCU because he wouldn't get the trust of the people because of all of the bad stuff he did for Hydra. In a sense, like him being the Winter Soldier. And also, if they haven't fully taken out the Hydra corruption, like, we don't know that for sure, that, say, Wakanda has fully taken that out. And if someone finds the Red Book again, what would happen if all of a sudden Captain America starts taking out, like, everybody when he's in Winter Soldier mode?
Right.
Like they have an excuse for it in terms of the universe that they've established.
Mm.
And... like, essentially, like, Sam was, like, Steve's best friend in current time, right? Right. Bucky was past best friend.
True.
You know, in the World War II timeline. But Sam was really his rock, like, during this point. Mm-hmm. And it kind of embodies more of what Steve Rogers and Captain America, like, symbolizes in the MCU, right? Because even Sam was still all about doing the right thing, even if... it was against the grain. Like, he was the one who was always with Steve, you know, like Civil War and stuff. And so, like I to me, they made a good choice, even especially in the new comics, him and Spider-Man kind of team up. So I'd like to see that. I'd like to see him in Far From Home as, like, new Cap helping out Parker.
On your left. That was a big moment.
That was good.
He finally comes through, and his radio's just crackling, and then he finally says it. I forgot it the first time, but the second time seeing it, when he says, on your left, I thought it was this, like, moment where Falcon comes flying out of one of those Doctor Strange sparkly ring things. But it wasn't. It was like a calming thing, and then you see Black Panther come out. So overall, I love the movie. I thought it was an awesome ending to this, you know, like, over a decade of making movies and building these stories and worlds for us. And even though I don't like Brie Larson, even though I'm still confused and upset about the timelines and time travel, which I get over for this movie. It's not like that upsetting. And, you know, knowing that this was going to be the end, like having to deal with that. Like, despite all those things, I thought this movie was fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. And to the point I made on one of our last episodes, which you weren't actually on, it was something that I completed. But I still said, there was a coworker I had that walking into work that said I just wanted to make sense. Like, overall, scratching all those three things that I just said, it made a lot of sense. And it just kind of put that cap on it. And I'm looking forward to what the MCU brings in the future. Mm-hmm. Kyle, what are your thoughts? Final thoughts.
I think Captain America should always be referred to as America's ass from now on. Should be one. So whenever we mention it, we should say America's ass on
that
the podcast.
That is America's ass. Yes.
Instead of Captain America from now on.
Deal.
We can be we can be like, so America's ass comes in this scene and does, I think it'd be great because I love that part. And a couple of people have been calling this movie like Avengers Time Heist because of what Ant-Man does. It's like, we're doing a time heist, guys. Yeah, I loved it. Hell, I saw it at midnight here when it came out, and being a three-hour movie, I didn't get out till 3:30 in the morning.
Fuck.
On my theater. They were running shows all the way up till 5 a.m. screenings is what they were doing here. Because it's still sold out here. You can't get a reserved seat at any theater around my area.
Damn.
It's impossible. Even in the theater where I work at, there's still lines that you have to deal with for people to come in. And that's with like the 1 or 2 p.m. showings. Like, kind of like middle of the day, like everybody should be working. Apparently everybody's still taking time off for it.
You gotta take a vacation around this time.
Oh yeah. Oh man. Yeah. But it was like an A++ for me. Loved it. And then the time travel stuff I'm fine with because, you know, I got my explanations. And one more thing about time travel, they can always bring the young versions of the characters back because of one scene that happened with Ant-Man when he was brought back as an old man or brought back as a young baby. Or like a teenager, if they could make Chris Evans come back as just normal Cap. Oh yeah, they have that.
No, I'm
remember,
done. No,
remember,
I can't do it. No,
I see this as an absolute win. Like that's what the Hulk said. He's like, guys, look at what we just did. We just de-aged someone. how is this not?
He'll
good?
Grow.
Yeah. This is an absolute win, guys. So. Like, to me, if they ever wanted to bring those versions of characters back, they could do it. Or there's another theory, like now that we can get the X-Men right into this.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, the snap causes a lot of gamma radiation, right? What created mutants in the X-Men timeline? Gamma radiation. So.
But they've existed since the dawn of man, right?
But I'm thinking like they can introduce the mutants like into this part of the MCU. As part of, like, the reverse snap. Like, oh, there's been so much gamma radiation that's been caused to this. Like, we have these human beings that now have these ultra-mega powers. Like if they wanted to introduce some, like, continuity-wise, right, to what's been happening. Also, you now have a 50% unemployment rate now.
Because, for what?
Well, the world's moved on after 5 years, and you just put half the human beings back on the planet.
Okay, now you're getting into economics, and you're okay. This is your political drive here, Kyle. I see what you're using this platform for.
It is going to cause more problems now. Like, you probably should have not even snapped in the first place, because now it's going to be complete fucking chaos.
We don't have time for this. This is what
I'm just saying, 50% unemployment rate. The world's fucked after this. Just saying.
Okay.
There we go.
All right. So we have wrapped up I'll call this a season of Don't Get Him Started, of discussing the MCU from its beginning origins with Iron Man, or some would argue with the Incredible Hulk, leading up to Endgame. And now the sky's the limit. Speaking of what you just talked about, we could talk about X-Men. We could talk about even like Howard the Duck, the Dark Knight series. We have so many things that we could discuss within the comic book realm and their transitions into movies and how successful they were and or unsuccessful they were, depending on which which version you get. So I'm very excited to continue that. So whoever is listening out there still, please tune in. And that's what you can expect with us, you know, from in the future. So like Kyle, I will thank you for all of your time put in to discussing the MCU and all of your thoughts and, you know, your love and admiration and hate and disgust for certain movies. And, you know,
especially
for now,
Dark World.
Yeah, okay. You know, just watch it again. Just watch it one more time. For now, I'm going to say goodbye, and Kyle, you will say...
I want a cheeseburger.
He wants a cheeseburger. I love you 3,000. Peace.
Love you 3,001.